Bibles open to Proverbs chapter 3. Proverbs chapter 3. Just put the timeline up there to have something up there, I guess. I don't really have any charts or anything for this. All right. In this session, what I want to do is to begin looking at, in fact, I think I will. Let me put the table of contents back up here. In fact, let me go to this one. When it comes to receiving now the instruction of wisdom, justice, and judgment and equity, there are corresponding exhortations that a father gives his son that allows for his son to have some intelligent understanding of what lies ahead, what the aims, the goals, and objectives of that form of information, or that form of, in our case, doctrine, is designed to do. There's encouragement in it for him as to answer questions as to why he needs it. And that's very, very important to a son, because we're adults, we're not children. And so therefore, as adult sons, our father makes us aware of what we are to expect, what we are to achieve, and at the outcome of it, what we can look back and say has been all accomplished by it. The pre-doctrinal exhortation is designed to get a lot of that done, and in preparation-wise for that to take place. In Proverbs chapter 3, verses 1 through 20, is the corresponding exhortation to receiving the instruction of wisdom. And especially in Romans 12:3, as we get underway, it matches up with these first eight verses, especially of Proverbs chapter 3. When I say matches up, it matches as Proverbs 3:1-8 being a corresponding exhortation to the son to receive that instruction of wisdom from his father. And I just want to reread those eight verses once again, and then focus our attention on the last two for the remainder of our time this morning. Once again, David, in exhorting his son Solomon to him getting his instruction in wisdom, says, "My son, forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments." Now, don't get all, you know, out of sorts with that kind of terminology, because, and don't come along and just superimpose on verse 1 that what David is after there is for Solomon to keep the law of Moses, because the truth of the matter is there's ways of talking about my law in the book of Proverbs and my commandments that's wholly within the context of a father's law and a father's commandment, and not specifically talking about the law of Moses. This is one of the reasons why people kind of get their self in a knot when they come to talking about our apostle, the apostle Paul, and they like to come along to passages like Romans 12:1, where Paul beseeches us, and they make a big deal out of that and say, well, in this dispensation of Gentile grace in which we live, we're not under the law, we're under grace, and therefore we're not commanded as if we were commanded by the law. Well, they're ignoring about a dozen other passages where Paul commands you. And he talks about my commandments to you, and don't forget my commandments. And that's not talking about the law at all. We're not under the law. But within a father instructing his son, there are certain business laws, and there are certain laws of his house, and certain commandments that the father gives his sons. And so don't, once again, get pinned down by terminology to thinking about it only in one way. But these are laws and commandments that has to do with what the father's going to teach his son. And we're going to talk about this in a moment, but one of the ways our Father does that with us in our epistles is He gives us information as a principle. And this is a principle. You go through a process of the doctrine coming to the point where it becomes a principle of life. And that's a principle by which you're going to live your life. We'll come back to that in a moment. But anyway, he says, don't forget these things. These are things that you're now going to be, that are so important to not have them far from you. The information that you get here, just like when you went back and thought and think about what Romans 8, 16 through 39 is going to be for you, you'll never get to a point anywhere in level 1 or level 2 or level 3 of your sonship education. Even as a man of understanding out here, you're still going to come back to Romans 8 as your blueprint for each and every component that you get throughout the rest of your sonship life. Folks, you can't imagine the amount of value that God has crafted Romans 8, 16 through 39 to be to you. That thing is like a blueprint, and you can be like that wise architect going back and checking that blueprint as each part of your edifice gets built. You can go back and check it and make sure that it's all there, because in nutshell form or in general form, this whole thing will be found there. And so you can always refer back to it. And when you refer back to that issue, you realize that there are things that you're going to always have as a permanent, ever-present, operational issue in your mind. And there's things that you're just not going to be able to forget. And when he says, "Forget not my laws, and keep let thine heart keep my commandments," something has to be done to your inner man, to your heart. And he says, there's profit in all of this. As those things are continually in your mind and continually operated upon. And he begins to enumerate some of the benefits. And that's what an exhortation is about. Son, here's the benefit to you for this. You don't just come to class and the professor sets up there and says, "Open your book," or "You don't need your book. Here's some notes," or whatever, and you can sleep through class. It doesn't really matter as long as you make the quizzes and tests and all that kind of thing. That's not this. This is your Father who deeply cares and loves you and wants to impart His heart to your heart. And therefore, you're going to be told before you even begin, here's the benefits, here's what is going to accrue to you by going through and putting the time in, and it's going to be that, folks, and going through the rigors, and it's going to be that, of this educational process. That's what it's going to be. It's, in some ways, it's going to get down to downright boot camp. But he says, here's some of the things that's in this for you. For length of days and long life. Length of days. There's things that you're going to make wise decisions about that's actually going to prolong your life. That may not sound even feasible right now, but it will. There's things that can actually go to... Because you're making a wise versus an unwise... You're choosing a path that could actually have physical effects upon you, as to one that has physical effects in a positive sense upon you. But we're not going to get into all of these details right now. And a lot of this, I think, you don't have any trouble handling. Length of days and long life and peace shall they add to thee. By the way, folks, this is one of the reasons why I said, as you go through the book of Romans and as you start to get past Romans 15:7, and when you get on into the final section of the book of Romans, you're going to find that your sonship education allows for you to perceive God in different ways, so that it's not just a title, not just a glorious way of talking about Him, but not in theory, but in reality, He becomes this to you. He becomes the God of hope, and then He becomes the God of peace. And you'll get to that before you get done with the book of Romans, where God is now the God of peace. And there's a benefit to the sonship decision-making skills that results in a godly contentment in your life, even though you may be in the midst of those things that are trying to separate you from the love of Christ. There is a godly generated peace, contentment, and tranquility that you can have, that can be yours in all of that. That's part of the residual effects of all of this. And by the way, that's highly counterfeited, copied, and marketed today to human beings. I'm not talking about the Dalai Lama's type of peace. And I'm not talking about Oprah Winfrey's type of peace. Because their type of peace is absence of problems. Your problems are just beginning. Let not mercy and truth forsake thee. Bind them about thy neck. Write them upon the table of thine heart. There's right there is an encapsulation of that sonship activity that's going to go along with your instruction of you communing with your Father and going over the information that you went through and making sure that it all rings true in your sonship prayer life. And you write that upon the table of your heart, and then the Spirit will come along once that's verified and that's checked out, and He'll, as it were, overwrite that on your heart. And you have that as a permanent matter, a permanent sensitive matter in your human in your human spirit from there all the way through, not to be forgotten, not to be laid aside. You're not just getting tools here that you're going to throw in a toolbox later on, never come back and use them. You're going to use wisdom every day of your life from now on. You're going to use justice, judgment, and equity every day of your life from now on. And in level two, you're going to operate upon the subtlety that you're given there every day from then on. You're going to operate on the knowledge and discretion every day from then on. As you gain these tools, they're going to be usable in every detail of your life. So let not mercy and truth forsake thee. Bind them about thy neck. Write them upon the table of thine heart. So shalt thou find favor and good understanding in the sight of God and man. You're going to have, at the beginning especially, a certain impact upon those in your periphery around you. There is a... And you'll see this even in your own home life. A peaceableness between you, your family, between you and your neighbors, and even in the sight of God. The next two verses are very, very familiar, but they are so critical here. And again, I don't have time to dwell on all of these because I want to get to something else here. But I think you're familiar enough with these, and we've talked about them in the past, and we don't have to go into great detail. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart. One of the things that you're going to have to realize, and you should have realized from what was accomplished in your sonship establishment, and even beyond, actually beyond, before you even got to sonship, but especially once you get through sonship establishment, that your Father is going to tell you things, teach you things, train you in things, that if He didn't say it to you, you would never, ever know the reality of it. You can't perceive that reality by any barometric reading that you would like to take, be it your health. This is the nutsiness of modern-day Christianity. That if I'm healthy, then I must be spiritual. And if I'm really sick, then something must be wrong with me spiritually. Or if I'm wealthy, that's spiritual. If I'm not wealthy, then I must not be very spiritual. This is insanity. This isn't even being honest with English, with the English language, let alone honestly handling the word of truth. But this is the kind of thing that is taught today, accepted today, and sometimes accepted in moderations. In variable levels, that, well, okay, maybe I'm not terribly poor, but I just don't seem to have as a whole lot of it. So there's variablenesses of it. And maybe because I drove off the parking lot, I got a flat tire, God's punishing me for something. There's people that think that way because I've heard pastors teach it. I heard one of the most popular pastors in the United States today tell his huge, enormous congregation that if they didn't keep the Ten Commandments, God was going to flatten all their tires on the highway. I am not making this up. I couldn't make that kind of crap up. In 30 seconds, that man had one particular character laughing, praising, hilariously pleased with all that was coming out of his mouth. And it was Satan himself. He couldn't have been more pleased with what that pastor was telling hundreds of thousands of people that God said. And that's total mishandling of God's word. Now you are going to be told things by your father that you're not going to sense by your feelings, by if you're healthy or if you're wealthy or not. That's got nothing to do with your spiritual life today. I know you can go back to Deuteronomy 28 and find if I do this, then God will give me that. But you're not under the law, you're under grace. And so therefore what that means and what you should already be able to acknowledge by the time you pass that checkpoint is that there's one thing about this sonship life I know. Every single thing my father's going to tell me, I'm going to have to believe what he says on the page of his word more than I'll ever believe what I feel, what I imagine, what I think, or anything else. That's the reality. And you've already experienced that. There's not a person in this room, unless you're lying to me, that says you feel dead to sin. You don't feel dead to sin, but you've already reckoned yourself to be that based upon the evidence that God gave you in His Word. And by this time, your Heavenly Father should be to you, even though you're just beginning the education in phase two of level one, but He should be the most trustworthy person with whom you will ever deal. You'll trust Him no matter what He says. That's the truth. I'll operate on that. And you are to be the most trusting person with whom He ever deals. And that's why one of the greatest hindrances you're going to have, beginning, literally, folks, if we get done today and we begin starting to deal with Romans 12:3 and on Wednesday night, beginning Wednesday night, one of the greatest hindrances you're going to have is the imaginations of your own heart. And he says, trust in the Lord with all thine heart, holding no part of that heart back. A wholehearted trusting in the capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D, Jehovah. And lean not unto thine own understanding. That's what you're going to, that's going to be the prevailing tendency of your thinking is going to be to lean to your own understanding. Because you're going to face some things that are going to be a little uncomfortable at first. Because they don't form to my own understanding. They don't conform to it. But you've already agreed with your Father that you're not going to be conformed to this world. You're going to be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge Him, and He shall direct thy paths. And once again, even though you're going to be making the decisions all on your own, it's going to be just as David would talk about later. And he would say, when I take your word that has been implanted into my heart and I put that into operation, it's as if your hand is upon me and moving me in the direction that I should go. And through his wisdom and his justice and his judgment and his equity, he shall direct thy path. But verse 7 and 8 is what I'm after here. Be not wise in thine own eyes. That's directly related to Paul coming along there in Romans chapter 12 and talking to us about not being thinking of ourselves more highly than we ought. And some other passages that are so pertinent there in godly wisdom. Be not wise in thine own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. It shall be health to thy navel and marrow to thy bones. This is a great exhortation. A healthy navel. I've always wanted a healthy belly button. And marrow to thy bones. Well, let's take a note of this as, again, the aims, goals, and objectives that we're going to achieve in Romans 12:3 through 16. that sometimes isn't understood and appreciated as well as it ought to be. And it forms a very powerful exhortation for us to get this instruction of wisdom from our Father as the first component of our godly sonship decision-making skills. Especially there in verse 8, it. The it there is the issue of verse 7. Be not wise in thine own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. It, verse 7, shall be health to thy navel and marrow to thy bones. Now David is exhorting Solomon to the effects that this sound wisdom and sound doctrine is going to have upon him that he's about to receive. That's what's often found in an exhortation. Father tells his son, look, son, here's what the results of this information that I'm about to give you and instruct you in will have upon you. Here, son, here's some of the benefits of what we're about to go through together. And you're going to get those as a result of getting wisdom as the first of four decision-making skills. And there is an effect of sound doctrine upon you. And there's an effect that doesn't merely affect your spirit and your soul. You know, as I'm sure all of you are aware, that you are trichotomous. You are made up of a body, a soul, and a spirit. Your inner man being that soul and spirit. Well, sound doctrine can actually have an effect not only on your spirit, not only upon your soul, but also upon your body as well. It can have a physical effect. And that's because since we have, as Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15 over there, we have a natural body, not a spiritual body right now. Our bodies, therefore, always are going to be responding to our soul and not to our spirit. In fact, that's one of the ways that you oftentimes see it illustrated. You have the SP for the spirit, then you have the soul, and then your outer man is your body. And the body is directly connected to the soul, and so it's going to be a body. The body responds to some kind of a soulish issue that's going on. And all I'm after right now is that's where the body begins to act certain ways or respond in certain ways to what's going on in the soul, not to what's going on in the spirit. And we're not going to get into all of that right now, but suffice it to say, to be very simple about it, that our body responds to our soul. It doesn't respond to our spirit. In other words, our soul functions kind of like, and I only mean kind of like, just by way of some way of an analogy or an illustration, the soul kind of functions like an interface between our human spirit and our body. And so the body responds to the soul. And so if your soul up here is quiet and tranquil, so to speak, then the body is calm. Now, I'm not talking about any physical illness, of course, you know. If you have Tourette's, for instance, and you have tics or something, I'm not talking about that. Or any illness physically that affects the body. I'm talking about your body's response to your soul. And he comes along and he says the health that he talks about there in Proverbs 3:8. My understanding is, though, that's not health from physical ailments as far as diseases go. He's not coming along and saying that this doctrine is going to be health to your navel in that goofiness that I just mentioned a few minutes ago about people saying if you're really spiritual, you'll never be sick. We know that's not true. We see that in Paul's life. We see that in the lives of many others whom he associated with, and even when Jesus would teach on certain things like that, he would say this wasn't done because of some sin. This was done to manifest something of God. But what I'm after here is that the health in Proverbs 3:8 isn't talking about health from physical diseases or physical ailments, or as far as accidents go, you're never going to be in an accident or anything along those lines. It's talking about the body's response. The it tells you it's the body's response to what's going on in the soul. And that's what the body does. Your body's just a giant responder, in most cases, to what goes on in your soul. One of the best ways to illustrate that every one of us will be able to have a touchstone to, so to speak, is that whenever you're in a situation where your body does something in response to your emotions, because that's where your emotions are. Your emotions are you're emoting from your soul. Your spirit can't handle a particular thing, and because of that, the soul starts to become distressed, and you start emoting. And when you start emoting, you don't just sit there, but something happens to the physical body. Some of you, in some cases, a lot more pronounced than others, but something happens. And so therefore, we've all experienced that body response to what's going on in the soul. And that's what the body does. Therefore, when, for instance, you've ever, I suppose one of the best ways to get that to happen or remember when that happened is if you have ever had to speak in front of an audience. They say that is the number one biggest fear of all human beings, the fear of having to speak in front of a bunch of people. I always laugh at my kids, even in college, when they're getting prepared to make a presentation and they're working furiously, hours and hours and sometimes weeks on a presentation. How long is this presentation going to be? Oh, it's 10 minutes. 10 minutes? I can't even say my name in 10 minutes. You know. But that's a fear that people have. If you've ever had to make a toast at a wedding, I know some of you have, I've heard them, or deliver a speech, teach a class, whatever. Or maybe I can approach it from another venue that you might be familiar with. If you've ever performed in front of a live audience, and I don't mean just as a musician, I've done it musically, which I would get tied in knots. As long as I wasn't soloing, I was okay. But on all those times when we soloed, I've seen this more times than you can imagine. I have been backstage and getting ready to go on, and all of a sudden somebody just bolts, takes off running. And I got so used to it, I wouldn't even turn my head. You know where they were running? Yeah, to do what? Throw up. They were throwing up. Yeah. My oldest brother, played baseball against he was famous at the time. He's not famous to any of you. He was about a 12-year big league pitcher by the name of Marty Patton. And he pitched for the Red Sox and he pitched for the Brewers. And they knew each other very, very well. Well, what people didn't know was that before Marty Patton would ever come out and pitch, every time he ever pitched, for all the years he was in the big leagues, as soon as he got through the first inning, he'd run down to the restroom and throw up. Did it every time he pitched. It was that kind of nerves. Or if you've ever, you know, and that's a good one too. You know, when you know, it's one thing to play in front of a group like you. It's another thing to play at the Conrad Hilton Hotel in Chicago in front of 5,000 of the most ardent music critics in the world, which I had the opportunity to do. So that's the kind of response. And you get sometimes queasiness. You get an upset stomach, or you get responses in your bowels. It's commonly called butterflies in the stomach. You might call it what I would call the Barney Fife effect. You know, when Barney, he'd try to go in the haunted house and he'd be shaking so bad, you know. Well, you get nervous, you get shaky, intense, in some cases throw up, your bowels get distressed, tight in knots. Well, all of that is based upon a response that your body is having to your soul. In fact, even in the case of falling in love with somebody, you can get that kind of response. We have that colloquial expression that we oftentimes use for that very thing when we often say, we're lovesick. And the word sick there, in that expression, refers to the fact that our body's responding to something going on in the soul. Our soul's doing something and our body's responding to it. We've got an emotional, soulish reaction or response coming out of our body. You know, you get the sweaty palms. I tried to hold hands with her, but I kept slipping away. You know, all that anxiety affects the body. Well, these are all kinds of things spoken about as the exhortation deals with these things here. And that's what's in view in Proverbs 3:8. It's the issue, when he's talking about health to your navel, it's the issue of a state of health. A state of health. A state of whatever you're talking about. Functioning normally. Without it being stressed, without it being abnormal in its function as a result of that stress. That's the basic concept of health. Whatever you're talking about, health of anything, it's functioning normally. Mental health, for instance, is a mind, therefore, that's in a state of distress. Or instead of being in a state of distress, it's in a state of peace. You got mental health. There's no stress there, there's peace there, there's nothing troubling it, nothing bothering it, therefore it's not causing you any problems in your life. You have mental health. And if you talk about physical health, all the organs of your body are functioning like they're supposed to, and you don't have any disease going on in there that's causing an organ or part of your body to function abnormally, you have physical health. Now when David's talking about health to your navel and marrow to your bones, while the issue will have effects upon your physical health, what's in view here is actually your spiritual well-being. And it's not just any well-being or general spiritual well-being, but it's a particular, special well-being that's in view, which involves the issue, look back up, that there's an issue of a particular distress that comes your way from what is stated back up in verse 7. Notice what he says, "Be not wise in thine own eyes, fear the Lord, and depart from evil." This is one of the reasons why I wanted to read as far as I did in the first session in Romans 12, by the way. Isn't there a verse there that comes along and talks about let love be without dissimulation, abhor that which is evil, cling to that which is good, and that's part of our instruction in wisdom. Well, you're told here, be not wise in thy own eyes, fear the Lord and depart from evil. There's a particular, listen, inner man distress in connection with the evil at the end of verse 7. And as I say before, as I've said before, as you go through your sonship education, you already know some things that are coming your way. And one of the things wisdom is going to be able to do is to give you clear knowledge of a good path versus an evil path to follow. And the simple issue that's in view here, and there in verse 7, is that when you conduct yourself, and you're told this before you even begin, when you conduct yourself as a wise son, making wise sonship decisions, and one who is not wise in his own eyes, but rather functions upon the information he's given in the curriculum, he's going to go through it and be benefiting from it, and from its effectual working, especially that part of wisdom that's going to identify evil for what it is, and allow for him to make wise sonship decisions when it comes to knowing what that evil is, to therefore leave it alone, to have nothing to do with it, to discern its enticements, and have nothing to do with it, not fall for those enticements. That's going to be health to your navel. And your navel is your guts. There's a highly technical medical word for it. But that's a simple description of the fact that the normal emotional distress that you're going to end up with when it comes to, once again, the forces that you're going to come up against of this world and the paths of this world and the evil and darkness of this world, and instead begin to make godly, wise decisions, this kind of proverbial description of it to us here in the exhortation so well provides to describe the fact that the normal emotional distress that you're going to end up with and find yourself experiencing if, as a son, you're stupid enough to go down that evil path and participate with that evil, this is going to spare you from all of that. This wisdom is going to spare you from the stupid decision to follow a path of evil and participate in it and have it become the stress and distress that is not going to be healthy or health to your navel. But this will spare you from that. And wisdom, the wisdom that you receive, and being not wise in your own eyes, and fearing the Lord departing from that evil, will be health to your navel, and it'll be marrow to your bones. Now, you can go back, we don't have time to do this morning, but you can go back to Job, and Job will tell you about the marrow of your bones. And Job will talk there in it's an interesting context. We really should go back and look at it, but it's an interesting context in which he brings up the issue of something being of your marrow, because he talks about your marrow being moistened. Again, these aren't highly technical medical terms, but I know this, that you want moistened marrow in your bones. If you don't have moistened marrow in your bones, you've got some problems. By the way, do you know what the bone marrow produces first and foremost? Blood cells. Yeah. Job knew that. And when you have good functioning moistened marrow, what the context he sets that in is how, and it sounds strange right now, but you have to read it in that context, but there's an encouragement to that for your life, to have moistened marrows, bones of marrow, with moistened marrow. Well, this describes here being marrow to your bones, exactly what's supposed to take place. The effects that wisdom is going to have upon you to save you and spare you from the effects that you would have under the evil path that you may choose, instead will be health to your navel and marrow to your bones. Every exercise in connection with beginning our sonship education, where we receive four categories of sonship decision-making skills, every one of those sonship decision-making skills is designed to not only produce the effect it's designed to produce, which is, in this case, departing from evil. That's what wisdom is going to produce. But it's also designed, listen, to produce a corresponding encouragement for part, on our part, for the effectual working of that information. Each one of these is to be health to your navel and marrow to your bones. It's to give a corresponding encouragement, and therefore we become more skillful on our part to utilize that decision-making skill and to apply it in other circumstances and other situations. That's the marrow to your bones issue. Even Job knew that marrow in the bones is what produces blood, which in turn is what produces life. The life of the flesh is in the blood. Therefore, the very ability to live your life physically is there in the blood. And what we're talking about here is functional life. You can have functional life. And the growing functional life of a son under level one sonship education comes from not merely acquiring. Listen, you don't just sit there and sponge it in. That ain't sonship, folks. You don't just sit there in the chair and just simply as a sponge drink it in. That's part of it, but that's not all of it. That's just getting the information. But when you think, that translates into living conduct and behavior, which ultimately is going to be translated into a particular form of laboring with your father in his business. Folks, that's exercise. And I don't mean that kind. I mean that's taking the information and exercising it. You exercise, put it into practice. And growing as a son under level one doesn't come from merely acquiring, but from exercising the son's instruction in wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity. And gaining the skills and the skill sets that come from all of that. And the experience that comes from all of that. And the confidence that you gain from each one of those things. And broaden the usefulness of them beyond the original parameters in which our Father set it. And to be able to see its usefulness in other areas, in other places, which is what it's designed to do. It's not just designed. You're going to be told that. This isn't just designed to sit in this one place. But this can be usable in a lot of places. And as a son living a particular kind of life, and all of us have different lives, we can find details in which that's applicable. And we would go to our Father. That's one of the things that sonship prayer is going to settle out. Father, you taught this to me in this context, in this situation, but I see it working here. Do you see any wicked way in me? And you have him search your heart in connection with that. And when you get the proper responses that you know you're going to be looking for, you go right ahead and use that in that area. That's one of the ways you're being trained. I guess you could call it, what do they call it? Multitasking. Well, that's the nature of the education. And as I said, coming back to something I said before, one of the reasons that we see and validate what I just said, that these things are going to be utilized here but can be utilized in other areas, is due to the fact that we will come along, especially as we start getting into into Romans 3 or 12, 3 and following, you're going to see things being said to you where they get said to you in forms of certain principles. And you see a bunch of those. In fact, you can let me just make sure I don't misquote them. But right on down in chapter 12 there, let love be without dissimulation. Abhor that which is evil. Cleave to that which is good. Be kindly affectionate. These start being rifled off almost like machine gun bursts. Be kindly affectionate one to another with brotherly love and honor preferring one. You get principles. Not slothful in business, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing instant in prayer, distributing to the necessity of the saints, given to hospitality, bless them which bless you, bless and curse not, rejoice with them that rejoice and weep with them that weep. You get taught things in principles. And that's an important aspect of teaching and an important aspect of instruction to appreciate, because our Father gives us things in the form of principles, and a principle is built upon that word. You get the principle, principle. It's built on that prince issue. Yeah, well, if you can read that. A principle is really built upon the core issue of the word prince. And a prince is a top-level ruler. That's one of the reasons we're getting principles. A prince is a top-level, and a principle is a top-level decision-making capacity. So when you get this instruction, and it's not, and it, so once the, we're the real meat of the instruction is going to take place is in the thinking process. When you move finally from that to the conduct and behavior, and from the conduct and behavior to the labor, when it comes to labor, you're going to get principle, 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 principle to put that into practice. And that's because that principle is that top level of the decision-making capacity, whether it be at wisdom, justice, judgment, or equity. And our Father gives us our instruction in wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity just that way. You get a series of principles, and we first get experience with them within the context in which we first got it taught to us and which He put it. But then the issue is for them to become marrow to our bones and to produce more. Your bones just don't go and produce one thing and say, okay, I'm done. No, they're continually producing that lifeblood. And these principles that our Father begins giving us, just as they are marrow to our bones, they continue to produce the lifeblood of the sonship life. You ever hear somebody talk about, let's get down to the marrow of the issue? Yeah, you're getting down to the lifeblood of the issue. And this the wisdom and the way in which our Father gives it to us is going to be the lifeblood of our sonship life. And one of the things that takes place as we now begin in verse 3, we've experienced some of it, but it's going to begin, our heart is going to get enlarged. And this is one of the problems the Corinthians had, and Paul would have to take them to task about, that they had straightened themselves in their own bowels, and their heart had become small. They needed to enlarge their heart. And as our heart gets enlarged, it gets greater. Listen, with a bigger heart, what is a heart, basically? It's a pump. So when you get a bigger heart, what do you get? A bigger pump. And you get a larger heart, you get more capacity to pump that life, that lifeblood. Pump that and to engage in more and more and more godly thinking and godly living and godly labor. This is, folks, a marvelous exhortation to us. That it be health to thy navel and marrow to thy bones. Well, both of those issues in verse 8 are the two things necessary that you need to hear and have in your mind so as a son you do not stop your education. Those two things are the necessary things for a son to not stop his sonship education and continue going on, to realize this is health to my navel. This is marrow to my bone. This is a life-giving blood of my sonship life. And that son and daughter, they don't stop their sonship education because you wisely apply the information. He departs from evil and produces the health to his navel. The distress isn't there. And it produces the marrow for the bones. He's going to be able to have greater capacity. And you're going to find this come up again, by the way, if you want to flip over to it, there in Proverbs 4. Beginning in verse 20, my son, attend to my words, incline thine ear to my sayings, let them not depart from thine eyes, keep them in the midst of thine heart, for they are life unto those that find them and health to all their flesh. That's later on in an exhortation, later on in our sonship education. You're going to find that same thing come up again, but it's health to all your flesh, not just your navel. And if you look at the surrounding context there, you'll find that there's more involved than just emotional distress that you're going to encounter as a son. And this isn't something that you're going to find in the exact same way in our... Or pardon me, this is. It's something you'll find that in the exact same pattern in our sonship education, because isn't one of the tactics that the adversary that we learned about back in Romans 8, not only tribulation, but distress? And what you're going to find is, you're going to find encouragement and actual effects upon your being, your well-being, to where with each step up, ratcheting up, that adversary's tactics can take, God has so crafted His Word to be able to come along and take that thing and turn that around 180 degrees and use it to your benefit. And just as we'd learned, you can handle that tactic that character, the adversary, Satan himself brings against you to try to separate you from the love of Christ, which is the love of your sonship life, and you can become the more than conqueror in that situation. That's exactly what we're left here for, why we get to fight in that contest with that adversary, so that we can prove to be and put on display the more than conqueror issue. And it's going to be health to your navel and marrow to your bones as well. So you gain the experience that comes out of all of that battle with the adversary, and it propels you to move on. Success after success after success. Win after win after win. You'll be able to come along and I remember on Wednesday I said that once we pass Romans 12, 1 and 2, I can talk to you differently now. I don't mind saying things that before then might scare you. But you'll be able to come along and as we go through this and these things work properly and they become health to your navel and marrow to your bones, you can shake your fist in that adversary and say, "That was nothing. What's your next tactic?" And you can do that without any carnal bravado whatsoever. You'll do that as a result of godly edification coming along and giving you the capacity to do that very thing. And that's what those concepts are about. Health to your navel and marrow to your bones. And of course, they apply to the members of the remnant of Israel and their sonship education as well. But those are marvelously encouraging things for us as we have that full, intelligent understanding of what we're going to face when we who are, as the apostle put it in the book to the Hebrews, in Israel's program to the remnant, made little lower than the angels. And yet it's the angels who look at you and me and see capacity within these little animated dirt clods. They see the capacity there that God created within us to be able to have godliness. And that they know one day we will be ruling over them. And on the upside of that, the unfallen angels in that angelic world are thrilled with the progress we've made and with the prospect of having someone on this earth finally who's going to be the intelligentsia running that creature who wisely, justly, judgmentally, and equitably knows what to do when they get there. And that's what a saint is supposed to know when he dies. By the time you reach your grave, you should be able to be placed into that creature in a position of responsibility and authority and giving life to that creature and liberating it from its bondage of corruption. Well, this is what's lying ahead of us and so much more that I haven't spoken of, but I hope I've said enough, especially about the way in which the adversary now sees what you're up to. Because you just exactly, and not to hold you anymore, but just as Israel all the way back here with Moses, when they came out of Egypt and began moving toward that land, Satan had to respond to that. Well, what he sees you doing now in starting to get body thinking and instruction in wisdom, justice, and judgment and equity, all the talk is over. You now are actually moving toward an objective that threatens his plan of what he wants to carry out throughout this dispensation of grace. And he's going to have to respond to it. And that's going to be some of the exciting aspects of what our Father's going to teach us. Because he's going to train us how to deal with all that, and it can handle it with no problem whatsoever. Well, we'll stop right there for today, and I think hopefully that exhorts you, clears some decks. The only thing I didn't do that I said I thought about doing more of was to go into the merchandise that you could purchase, because that's an exciting aspect of gaining these skills and acquiring these decision-making skills. But I'm going to let that go instead of going into that and try and tie this up with an exhortation that kind of matches what we've been talking about here to begin now the education with intelligence of what its aims, its goals, objectives are, and then begin looking at it in detail. So we'll stop right there, and if all else works right, why Wednesday night we will begin talking now about Romans 12, 3 through 16. So you know how that's going to go. We're going to have to see the components of it, start at the top, wide angle, and then work in toward the details. So we'll start right there on Wednesday night.